Hi, I'm Larry Rifkin. We'll turn first to the editorial and opinion pages of the New Haven Register. The date is July the 6th. The editorial headline, Packed Lots Show State Loves Its Public Parks, by the Hearst, Connecticut Media Editorial Board. Thumbs up to people enjoying the state's wide array of public spaces over the holiday weekend. There was so much enjoying going on that a number of parks had to be closed to new arrivals early due to crowding. As of 10 a.m. on Sunday, 5 state parks were closed due to parking lots filled to capacity, with more added throughout the day, and again on Monday. It was a welcome weekend of mild weather across the state, with no sign of the oppressive humidity sure to arrive later in the summer. For those shut out of some of the most popular parks, there were plenty of other options, including on the shoreline and in thousands of miles of trails all around the state. Thumbs down to rising rents in Connecticut and beyond. Driven in part by the pandemic and also by a shortage of available units, asking prices for apartments in the state have been on the rise for years. Part of what experts say is a nationwide destabilization of the market. Despite the difficulties many are facing in the state, it appears Connecticut is in better shape than some parts of the country, where rents are far outpacing the rate of inflation. Still, it's a struggle for people looking to relocate here, and it comes in an era of stagnant population growth for Connecticut. To change that reality, the best course would be to increase supply, since the demand clearly exists. Too many towns, however, stand in the way with strict local zoning laws. Thumbs up to the state's establishment of a rare disease advisory council, which is aimed at helping people facing difficult circumstances who can often feel like they're all alone in the struggles. In May, Governor Ned Lamont signed into law a bill creating the 13-member council that follows creation of a previous temporary board. Having a permanent entity gives them a little bit of status and makes it easier to pursue their agenda, said State Representative Jonathan Steinberg, who chairs the legislature's Public Health Committee. They pushed very hard for several years to give them permanent status. We had to agree that they deserve that opportunity. Thumbs up to the opening of the new transit center at Bradley International Airport, which eliminates the need for people to take a bus to pick up their rental cars at the airport. Bradley has been in the news recently over increasing competition from Tweed New Haven Airport as it ramps up service to locations nationwide. But Bradley remains by far the state's number one option for airline arrivals. As such, it's important that the first steps into Connecticut be welcoming ones, and this new development will help ensure that is the case. There's more to be done, including better transit access to the airport, so people could maybe skip the car altogether. But for now, this is a welcome step. Thumbs down to conference realignment again. Are UCLA and USC, which epitomize Southern California, really going to be part of the Big Ten, a college sports conference defined by Midwestern teams like Ohio State and Michigan? Yes, they are, because that's where the money is to be made. Luckily for Connecticut sports fans, UConn has a stable home in the Big East. But don't think the never-ending game of musical chairs will not affect our Huskies again at some point. Were a big-money conference to come calling, UConn would answer the door like anyone else. In the meantime, Husky fans can be glad we'll never have to worry about the AAC again. Justice should be more prudent. Thursday, July 7, the headline of the editorial in the Republican American of Waterbury. In the wake of the U.S. Supreme Court's abortion decision in Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization, Connecticut Supreme Court Justice Andrew J. McDonald took a jab at the U.S. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas via social media. That was beneath Justice McDonald's office. Justice McDonald had other forums for making his views known. Dobbs overruled Roe v. Wade 1973. Justice Thomas was in the Dobbs majority. In a concurring opinion, he stated that the High Court's 2015 decision in Obergefell v. Hodges, which protects same-sex marriage laws enacted at the state level, was wrongly decided. That didn't go over well with Justice McDonald, who is gay. In a Facebook post, Justice McDonald noted that while Justice Thomas criticized Obergefell and two other U.S. Supreme Court decisions, he made no mention of Loving v. Virginia, 1967. CNBC reported on June 27th, Loving saw the U.S. Supreme Court hold that states may not ban interracial marriage. Justice Thomas is a black man married to a white woman. Mr. Justice Thomas had much to say today about my loving marriage, wrote Justice McDonald. Oddly, he didn't have much to say about his loving, in quotes, marriage. Justice McDonald, like every other American, is entitled to his opinion. However, it is impolitic and undignified for a state Supreme Court justice to use social media to take a personal swipe at a U.S. Supreme Court justice. This episode reflects poorly on Justice McDonald and the Connecticut Supreme Court at large. Justice McDonald, like all jurists, can engage in scholarly writing. That would have been a more dignified and grown-up way for him to make his point about Justice Thomas. Additionally, the message would have come across as less political. For some time, Justice McDonald has faced criticism, including from this column, for being too political. Courts and jurists always should be above politics. Certainly, Justice McDonald has a unique perspective on this important issue. His views should be heard. However, Justice McDonald's use of Facebook was wholly inappropriate. Hopefully, the justice will be much more careful going forward. Back to the Hearst, Connecticut Media Editorial Board, dated July 3rd. Editorial, a setback for Connecticut in the fight for cleaner air. Connecticut is more aware than most states of the dangers of power plant emissions. Thanks to what one former official called air pollution transported into Connecticut from upwind sources and emissions that are beyond our jurisdiction, this state has long suffered from serious pollution problems that we can't do anything to control. Midwest power plants turn us into the tailpipe of America. Years of lawsuits filed by state officials have only accomplished so much, and the state continues to experience high levels of ozone in the summertime. It's bad for our health and puts the most vulnerable people in the greatest danger. As we know now, however, the negative effects of fossil fuel emissions go far beyond immediate health concerns. Climate change is real and is already happening, and it's driven in large part by power plants and other large-scale sources of pollution. It's incumbent on the federal government to crack down on emissions if we're to have any chance of avoiding the worst outcomes. Even at this late date, however, not everyone sees it that way. States have fought back against what they call federal overreach in the regulation of power plant emissions. And one suit just days ago was the subject of a ruling in the U.S. Supreme Court's final day this session. Though it was overshadowed by some of the more explosive rulings on abortion and guns, West Virginia versus the EPA is a momentous decision all on its own. By some measures, the decision was not as damaging as it could have been. Observers had said that they were concerned the court could rule that carbon emissions were completely beyond the realm of acceptable enforcement on the part of the Environmental Protection Agency. The court didn't go that far, though some of its members signaled that day could be coming in the future. Instead, the court ruled only on the matter of existing power plants, not whatever is built in the future. However, since such facilities can last for decades, it's a serious blow to the ability of the federal government to enact necessary regulations. Connecticut facing the ongoing threat to our air quality from Midwestern power plants, as well as the existential worry of climate change, was once again on the losing end of a major Supreme Court decision. In the end, however, it's everyone who pays the price. There's no future for coal-powered plants, and they should be phased out as soon as is practicable. Instead, thanks to this court, they will likely be polluting our air long into the future. Connecticut, too, needs to make changes. So-called natural gas is no panacea, and in fact presents many environmental problems of its own. But several times in recent years, this state has approved the opening of new natural gas-fired power plants. We're by no means in the clear in our environmental record. We need to do better. Though the Supreme Court decision is a setback, like-minded states like California and New York have set stricter goals for their own power plant emissions going forward. A consortium of states that does take climate change seriously is our best bet for the near future. Editorial: Libraries should make decisions about books, not politicians. In the Hartford Courant from June 30. Colchester First Selectman Andreas Bispikos said the book in question was immediately removed from circulation. That sounds more than a bit like censorship, but no, Bispikos maintains it's not. Pulling a book about LGBTQ icon, entertainer, and drag queen RuPaul off of a display of children's books was not book banning. The Cragen Memorial Library director was simply asked to temporarily remove the book only from the children's section, according to Bispikos. The book was deemed by a parent as inappropriate for young readers because it contains purportedly sexually provocative imagery. The RuPaul biography, part of a pride display at the library for the month of June, depicts a cosmetic advertisement RuPaul was featured in years ago, in which women dressed in bustiers and thigh-high boots spelled out the word V-I-V-A, Viva, Byrode has said. The library director, however, also pointed out that objectified images of women are seen in other books that have not been pulled from shelves, including those featuring female superheroes. She's right about that, and we all know such images of women are not limited to books about superheroes. The targeting of RuPaul's book brought immediate pushback from LGBTQ advocates, including Patrick Dunn, executive director of the New Haven Pride Center. Dunn pointed out how important the representation of LGBTQ people in children's literature is to the health, well-being, and the survival of young LGBTQ people and youths with same-sex or transgender families. The idea that a young person might be able to go to their public library and be browsing through the shelves and see someone that looks like them could literally save a life, Dunn told The Current. Seeing representation in your community is life-saving. Dunn makes an important point. As LGBTQ adults and children continue to be targeted by bullying and worse in this state and the country, equality, acceptance, and understanding are needed, and books can help communities reach those goals. But what about the parent who found the book offensive to children? When complaints about a book's content come in, Byrode and another library staffer review the book for overall content and follow a sometimes lengthy procedure to evaluate the book's place in the library's collection. The decisions are not made lightly, she has pointed out. Byrode has since reviewed just such a complaint about the RuPaul book and will start the review process. For his part, Bispikos has said he does not think the book is appropriate for young readers. Its target age is fourth grade and older. The issue of this book, for me, really has to do with its placement. Does it belong in the children's section, or does it not? Bispikos told The Current. I don't believe that an image like that belongs in the children's section of the library, but I would have no concern with it being in another section of the library. Bispikos is right that he should play no role in which books are bought or displayed in the town library, and also that the parents' complaint about the book should be seriously considered. But Byrode also is right, that there is a process in place for the library to follow, and that is what she intends to do. She will not be rushed, and that bodes well for this library and decisions about the books and other materials it contains. The library staff should make the decision and not the parent. This is a process. This is not turn around 30 minutes later and pull the book. And while for now the book is internally checked out, meaning it is not on display, it can be viewed at the library upon request. Even better, there have been patrons who sought to borrow the book this week, and copies are being sent out from other libraries in the state, according to Byrode. The Supreme Court sabotages efforts to protect public health and safety, July 1st, by the editorial board of the New York Times. On Thursday, the Supreme Court's conservative majority, with its 6-3 ruling in the case of West Virginia versus Environmental Protection Agency, curtailed the power of the agency to protect the environment, and specifically to require the reductions in emissions that are urgently necessary to limit global warming. The court's ruling constrains any effort to tighten restrictions on carbon dioxide emissions from power plants. It also threatens the Biden administration's ability to impose new limits on tailpipe emissions from cars and trucks and on methane emissions from oil and gas facilities. As the three members of the court's liberal minority wrote in a stinging dissent, the majority's decision strips the EPA of the power to respond to the most pressing environmental challenge of our time. The Biden administration, already struggling to persuade Congress to invest in renewable energy and compelled by Russia's invasion of Ukraine to push for increased production of fossil fuels, once again finds its ambitious goals for confronting climate change slipping beyond reach. The court's adversarial posture means that the administration must double down on its efforts to win congressional support for its spending plans. President Biden and Democratic leaders should also press to pass legislation clarifying the EPA's authority to regulate emissions. Thursday's ruling also has consequences far beyond environmental regulation. It threatens the ability of federal agencies to issue rules of any kind, including the regulations that ensure the safety of food, medicines, and other consumer products that protect workers from injuries and that prevent financial panics. In 1984, an earlier generation of conservative Supreme Court justices formalized a doctrine of deference to the judgment of regulatory agencies, modestly concluding that judges were neither experts nor elected officials, and therefore ought to leave such decisions in other hands. In Thursday's decision, the court asserted that the policy of deference applies only to supposedly unimportant regulations. When it comes to major questions of regulatory policy, the court said it would not hesitate to second-guess regulators and to strike rules that it decided did not have a clear congressional warrant. The decision amounts to a warning shot across the bow of the administrative state. The court's current conservative majority, engaged in a counter-revolution against the norms of American society, is seeking to curtail the efforts of federal regulators to protect the public's health and safety. The court already invoked a similar logic during the COVID pandemic to strike down workplace COVID testing requirements and a federal moratorium on evictions. And by refraining from defining a threshold for what constitutes a major question, the court is leaving a sword hanging over every new rule. The West Virginia case has its origins in 2015. When the EPA imposed new limits on carbon dioxide emissions from coal-fired power plants, the agency determined that it was impossible for those plants to reduce emissions to what it regarded as a safe level while producing the same amount of electricity. Burning coal is simply too dirty. Accordingly, it directed companies to cut emissions by reducing output or by shifting to other forms of power generation. The rule never took effect. The court stayed its implementation in 2016, and the Trump administration withdrew it in 2019. But the litigants, including the states of West Virginia and North Dakota and a pair of coal companies, pressed ahead with a lawsuit to make sure the rule stayed dead. Chief Justice John Roberts, writing for the majority, agreed with their claim that the EPA did not have the authority to require companies to shift resources to other kinds of power generation. Mr. Roberts wrote that the court's longstanding policy in such cases of deference to the agency's own assessment of its authority did not apply because the stakes were too high. It's a theory long championed by Justice Neil Gorsuch, who explained in a concurring opinion that administrative agencies must be able to point to clear congressional authorization when they claim the power to make decisions of vast economic and political significance. The EPA clearly has the legal authority to set an acceptable standard for emissions, in this case of carbon dioxide, and then to impose restrictions on emitters, in this case coal-fired power plants. The court did not contest these facts. Instead, it ruled that the Clean Air Act does not provide the EPA with sufficient authority to achieve those emission standards. Chief Justice Roberts described this conclusion as a defense of congressional authority, an assertion of the primacy of elected officials. But constraining the power of regulatory agencies should not be understood as a shift in the locus of decision-making. Rather, it effectively prevents good decisions from being made. Congress has decided, and with good reason, that regulatory agencies staffed by experts are the best available mechanism for a representative democracy to make decisions in areas of technical complexity. The EPA is the entity that Congress relies upon to figure out how clean air should be and how to get there. Asserting that it lacks the power to perform its basic responsibilities is simply sabotage. It's a telling fact that power producers, in response to market forces, have achieved the shift to cleaner energy that the EPA sought to require in 2015, validating the agency's assessment of what it could reasonably mandate. Chief Justice Roberts' predecessors recognized their own limitations. In the 1984 ruling that formalized the court's policy of regulatory deference, Justice John Paul Stevens wrote that judges are not experts in the field and are not part of either political branch of the government. Both points are important. The court lacks technical expertise and electoral mandate. Thursday's decision, asserting a more muscular role, is thus a blow to both the public interest and to democracy. Voters control flag policy. The Pride flag, dated Wednesday, July 6th, in the Republican American. Sometimes even democracy, exercised with sober propriety, can raise a small-town hackle or two. Thus has the Goshen Board of Selectmen been moved to impose a moratorium on new flag displays as a result of complaints about the LGBTQ Pride flag flown during June on the information kiosk in the park next to Town Hall. First Selectman Todd Caracillo has fielded numerous complaints about the flag from residents who believe town property should not be used for flags representing social causes, Republican American correspondent John McKenna reported on June 30. There have also been requests this week to fly a heterosexual flag and a Confederate flag on the information kiosk for as long as the Pride Month flag is up, Caracillo said. If the rainbow flag had appeared mysteriously over the kiosk and was left there by negligent town officials, the people who complained about it might have a point. But the flag display was requested by a town resident and approved by the Board of Selectmen. This was an exercise in representative democracy. Likewise, representative democracy would be sufficient to deal with requests that the stars and banner bars or a heterosexual flag, whatever that is, be flown on town property. If selectmen make irresponsible decisions regarding flags, banners, and other displays on town property, voters presumably will send those elected officials packing on election day. There's really no need for a moratorium, though many residents and government officials would seize upon anything that makes the issue go away for a while. Flag controversies have become all too frequent recently, notably in Litchfield, where placement of yellow ribbons and even American flags on the town green has fueled controversy. Maybe these controversies erupt because there are too many flags, from Pride Parade to the Black Lives Matter banner to various incarnations of the U.S. flag competing for space on America's flagpoles. It's not about flying that flag, Christopher Weary, a Green Bay, Wisconsin alderperson, said during a discussion of the Pride flag on June 29th. It's about once you start flying one, you open Pandora's box. Goshen, where voters last month made an apocalyptic decision in favor of regionalization of public education, has bigger issues on its plate. The horror in Highland Park was just part of an increasingly sickening culture of gun violence by the New York Post editorial board dated July 5th. Yet another mass shooting rocked the nation this weekend. This one at a 4th of July parade in Highland Park, Illinois, that left 7 dead and dozens injured. Alas, that wasn't the only horrific toll from the weekend gun violence nightmare. In New York City alone, a mind-boggling 52 people were shot from Friday to Monday. That truly frightening city figure includes 21 victims just on Independence Day, 13 over a 9-hour period. That's a 62.5% jump from last year's already alarmingly high number of 32 for the July 4th weekend. Among those struck this year, a 62-year-old bystander in the Bronx, a correction officer at a Queens party, 3 men at a Brooklyn deli, an NYPD worker's boyfriend hit in a drive-by shooting in Manhattan, 2 former college rugby players sitting in a cab, an off-duty auxiliary cop in the Bronx. Even an aide to Mayor Eric Adams was held up at gunpoint Tuesday while scouting a Brooklyn location for his boss to visit. Nor was the insanity limited to New York. After 2 cops were shot in Philadelphia, Mayor Jim Kenney said he was looking forward to leaving office. Now there's leadership. Oh, and summer. Typically, the bloodiest time of the year is only getting started. Yes, the mass shooting deserves big headlines. A madman fires more than 70 rounds, police say, randomly targeting children, the elderly, and average citizens at a celebration where people are closely gathered. The mere thought should send shivers down the back of any normal American. Yet, it's part of an American culture that's been growing ever sicker. Well, that's it for today's edition of Cross Currents. I've been reading from the editorial and opinion pages of the New York Times, the Hartford Courant, the New York Post, the New Haven Register, and the Republican American. I'm Larry Rifkin. So long, until next time.